Hey folks, it's Jared. This week I'm joined by author and beachcomber Tracy Williams, and we'll be discussing her book, Adrift, The Curious Tale of the Lego Lost at Sea. Tracy did want me to annotate here that in the episode she did misspeak at one point and incorrectly cited the number of green dragons in the container. The correct number is 514. And if you're now utterly confused what it is that I'm on about, listen to the episode, 514 Green Dragons. This episode was edited and produced by Alexia Bulagi. We are still looking for additional audio editors, so we're happy to provide you with some very basic training materials and instruction in a low-stress environment. If you're interested in finding a way to contribute to SimSec and add to your resume and personal skill set, please send us an email with your resume, ccontrol@simsec.org. Finally, I want to take the opportunity to recommend our partners in the SimSec podcast network, the Bilge Pumps. You can find Alex, Jamie, Drac, and a pile of Iron Brew bottles wherever you download your podcasts. On that note, I'll turn it over to Kimber's men.
You're listening to Sea Control, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security.
Aloha, shipmates, and welcome back aboard Sea Control. My guest today is Tracy Williams. We'll be discussing her book, Adrift, The Curious Tale of the Lego Lost at Sea. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hello, my name's Tracy Williams, and I'm a beachcomber in Cornwall in the UK.
Well, thank you again for joining us. And as a reminder, all opinions are our own and not reflective of any institution with which we might be otherwise associated. Tracy, before we get into the written content of the book, can you tell us a little bit about the book's final design? As I know you saw me comment yesterday, it was one of the most aesthetically pleasing things that I've ever held in my hands here. But you've collected newspaper clippings. There are poems in the book. There are these beautiful paintings, which you're going to have to tell me about the origin of some of the paintings as well. But pictures. There are little asides in the book to tell stories from your time as a beachcomber. How did the design of the book come together?
I think it all started as online a scrapbook, if you like. I've been following the story of the Lego Lost at Sea for 25 years, and every time something interested me, I made a note of it, jotted it down, wrote it in a notebook. I put some of it on my social media feeds, and gradually that became the basis of the book. And when I was first approached by a publisher, I sent them my scrapbook, if you like, to show them what I'd accumulated, and that became the basis for the book. But I have to say, much of the design of the book, the credit must go to Felicity Price Smith, the illustrator and designer, who did a fantastic job, I think, of pulling it all together.
And can I ask where the different paintings came from? Were those from your private collection, just things you've encountered over the years, or were those Felicity's choices?
It's a mixture. The photographs, many of the photographs are mine, but many Lego finders also gave permission for their photographs to be used too. The illustrations were produced by Felicity, and she came to stay with me in Cornwall to get a feel for the landscape, if you like, and based her illustrations on what she saw while she was here.
Now we're going to go a bit out of order with the questions because you brought this up already, but you're a self-identified beachcomber. So what does that label mean to you?
For me, beachcombing is scouring the shores for treasure. I think the nature of beachcombing has changed very much over the years. When I was a child, we used to go beachcombing as a family. And in those days, we would search for shells and sea glass and interesting shaped pebbles. But I think beachcombing has changed now. There's so much plastic washing ashore. And I think many people these days hunt for plastic as well as shells or sea glass.
What makes it into your personal treasure bag as you're going down the shore?
The Lego. I'm always interested in finding the Lego. Anything that's got a story behind it, really. Old plastic interests me. Anything with writing on, anything that you can trace back to source. I don't know if you've heard about it, but a few years ago, we found some shipwreck cargo washed up. Many beachcombers found these slabs of gutta percha, which had the name of an Indonesian village in it. And we traced the story behind those as they washed up all the way from Bermuda to Holland. And we found out they were coming from a shipwreck where a salvage operation was going on. And these blocks were being released while the salvage crew were looking for something else. So that became a story as well. So anything that's got a story behind it. I particularly like the really old plastics, the cereal packet toys, anything you can date. We recently traced some of the cereal packet toys back to the 50s and 60s. There are lots of resources where you can check the dates of these finds.
So what happened to the Tokyo Express then on February 13th, 1997?
So the Tokyo Express was en route from Rotterdam to New York when it was hit by a rogue wave 20 miles off the coast of Cornwall, and 62 containers fell overboard. One contained nearly 5 million bits of Lego, and many of the pieces were sea-themed. We know what was in a couple of other containers. There was hose parts in one and lighters in another, but it's a mystery what was in a lot of them. Most of the goods sank to the seabed. But interestingly, even though the goods sank, we're still finding them washed ashore 25 years on, and many are making their way along the seabed.
How did you become aware of what had happened with Tokyo Express?
At the time, my parents had a house on the clifftops in South Devon, and we often used to go beachcombing there and bring home all the treasure we found. And in 1997, we started to find bits of Lego washed up, and there was just so much of it that we knew it was from a cargo spill. So we found little life jackets and bits of ship rigging and tiny flippers and little life jackets. And we gathered them all up, and we used to keep them in Tupperware boxes on the kitchen windowsill. And then as our hoard grew, we transferred it to my father's shed on the top of the clifftops. As well as the little pieces, we found the occasional dragon or Lego octopus. The Lego octopuses were really the holy grail of the Lego hunting at the time. There were something like 33,000 dragons, but only 4,200 octopuses. So we were always on the hunt for those.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Were there specific pieces that you were looking for?
I think at the time, the most exciting finds were the dragons. I still remember my neighbour finding a green dragon. We never found one of those. There were, as I said, 33,000 black dragons, but only 400 or so green dragons. And so they became highly sought after. And interestingly, a week before we published the book, somebody found one of the green dragons washed up in North Cornwall. So we think it's probably been lying on the seabed for the last 25 years. But at the time, we didn't know everything that was in the shipping container. We only knew the same 12 or 13 items used to wash up all the time. And back then, we didn't know of all the other items that had fallen to the seabed. And we still never found many of those, such as the Lego sharks. Where are they? There are over 50,000 Lego sharks in the container that fell off the Tokyo Express. But as far as we know, none of those has been found. So they might be still trapped in a plastic box at the bottom of the sea, or they might just be in the remains of the shipping container. We're not sure.
How did you determine what exactly was in the shipping container with the Lego? Because I think this is a good opportunity as well to talk about your co-author, your contributor. And I can't remember his name because I don't have the book title in front of me. But
Curtis Ebersmeyer.
Yes.
I started corresponding with him after finding the blocks of gutta percha washed up. And I knew he'd written a story about the Lego at the time. It turned out he had written to Lego, and they had sent him a list of all 100 items that were in the shipping container. But at the time we were finding the Lego, I didn't know that, but we just kept finding these same old pieces. But then we started to find new pieces. And so I wrote to Dr. Ebersmeyer and said, you know, could these pieces also be from the spill? And it turned out he published a list of all the pieces he thought would float, but not ever published the list of all those that he thought would sink. And so there was a more comprehensive list that included all the Lego that sank to the seabed. So I managed to get hold of a copy of that. It was actually quite complicated working it out because there was just a list of part numbers. These days, it's quite easy to trace a bit of Lego. There's websites galore. But I think back in 1997, when these lists were put together, there weren't these resources available. So it was a bit of detective work, actually, trying to match all the part numbers with the bits of Lego in the box. But we did eventually do that. And we found out that actually about perhaps 80% of the Lego sank, perhaps more than was originally anticipated. But interestingly, we are now finding the bits of Lego that sank. They are still gradually making their way ashore, but there are still many pieces we've never seen. There are things like magic wands and dragon wings. We've never seen any of those. What we don't know is whether the container might still exist or whether it long since rusted away. It would be really interesting, I think, to go and have a look and see if we could find them.
And one of the things I was surprised about was forthcoming Lego was, as you know, you and your co-author there corresponded with them as far as what they provide you. So explain to us a little bit about the way the company responded to you, the items that they provided, and then what you observed from other companies or the way they handle cargo that's lost at sea.
I think at the time, Lego were extremely helpful. I mean, it's very rare that companies would actually divulge what they've lost overboard. It seems to be a secret world. Very often you only hear about cargo spills when you start to find items washed up. And very few companies are forthcoming about what they've lost. But Lego were very open at the time. And I think also at the time, we know a lot more about plastic in the ocean now than we did back in 1997. And I think for many people, a cargo spill of nautical themed Lego was a bit of fun. And it became a treasure hunt and everybody joined in. And Lego sent free samples of Lego to people who wrote in to say they'd found it. I think nobody realized at the time that we would still be finding it 25 years on. And I did interview Lego when I was writing the book, and they said, you know, they really wish they could turn the clock back. It was an accident. It was out of their control, and they certainly wouldn't want it to happen. But what do you do? You know, if you ship something and a container falls off, it's not like when you lose a container on a road, is it, where you can go and sweep it all up when it's lost at sea. These days, sometimes companies will offer to go and pick up the pieces, but there was a spill of printer cartridges in 2014. It was the HP printer cartridges, and they did offer to send people to pick up the cartridges, but the cartridges washed up all the way from Bermuda to Norway, and they didn't wash up in vast numbers all on one beach. You know, they were spread, you know, far and wide. So it's actually very difficult for a company, I think, in circumstances like that to actually make amends. So sometimes companies will do what they can. They'll set up recycling services and fund beach cleans, and some say nothing. Some just keep silent and hope nobody ever notices that they've lost a container of goods.
Now, did you have a pre-existing relationship with Lego before you started researching this topic? And by pre-existing relationship, I mean, you mentioned in your foreword, I believe, had Lego sets, or you played with them as children, stuff like that.
Yes, I mean, I think everybody has some Lego in their household, don't they? Certainly I grew up playing with it, and my children grew up playing with it, and we still have boxes full of it in the attic. I've always loved Lego. I didn't set out to write this book as a sort of to focus attention on Lego as a source of marine plastic. I think for me, it was searching for Lego that really made me realize how much plastic there was in the ocean. It was while I was picking up the Lego that I noticed everything else that was there. And I think for many people, it's been the same. I was contacted. I set up a Facebook page called Lego Lost at Sea because I'd become part of a beach clean group. And I thought it would be really interesting if we could map how far the Lego had traveled over the years. And I was keen to find out who else had found it and which pieces they'd found. So I'd set up these Facebook pages, and various Lego designers actually got in touch with me. So the relationship with Lego really began then. And they said to me, you know, in fact, one designer asked me if he could have a Lego octopus to put on his desk so that every time he designed something, he had it in mind that it could end up in the sea. So I did have a relationship with various Lego team members over the years, but it was when I was actually writing the book that I contacted Lego and ask them for some input, really.
And did you provide the octopus, or was that too valuable to part with?
It was
with?
Too valuable. At the time, I only had two. I did invite the designers beach combing with me to see if he could find his own.
That's tough, but fair.
They're still quite sought after. They are still turning up, though.
Now, this bill and others have contributed a number of scientific discoveries relatable tide and the impact of plastics on the ocean, which we've mentioned a couple of times now. What were some of the scientific discoveries that have come out of this?
One of the things we did was teamed up with scientists at the University of Plymouth to see if we could work out how long Lego could survive in the ocean. During beach cleans, we pick up all sorts of different pieces of Lego. They're not all from the cargo spill. Some of the pieces we find date back to the 60s, perhaps the 50s. So we supplied all these samples to the university, and they tested them to see how long they would survive in the marine environment. So not Lego from the spill, but just general classic style bricks. And they worked out that the bricks could last anywhere from 100 to 1300 years in the marine environment. So that was quite enlightening. We've also been mapping and tracking the Lego as it's washed up, so keeping a database of how far it's travelled over the years. And we're also now adding to that by keeping a record of all the Lego that's been found that's not drifted ashore, but has actually worked its way along the seabed. So the Lego that originally sank, because probably not as much as known about how far Lego and items generally on the seabed can travel. So I live about 55 miles from the site of the spill. And this winter, I found numerous bits of Lego from the spill that sank back in 1997. So we've known they've taken 25 years to travel 55 miles. And in fact, last week, I found one of the Lego life rafts from the spill. It's all still coming ashore. And what we don't know is whether all the pieces we've never seen will also soon start to make their way ashore.
As the research, as far as the mapping and tracking, is that available anywhere online where people can contribute?
It will be. It's not available online at the moment. But again, I'm teaming up with scientists at the University of Plymouth. We haven't written that paper yet. That's the one we're working on next. We did publish a paper on the spread of the HP printer cartridges. We tracked 1,500 as they washed up around the world on hundreds and hundreds of different beaches. So that has been published. But the Lego mapping one will be our next paper.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. The book is Adrift, The Curious Tale of the Lego Lost at Sea. There are a number of different places you can find it online, but we'll include a link to it if you'd like to order it. I'd like to thank my guest, Tracy Williams. Tracy, where can we find you online? And I know you mentioned a number of projects that you have going, but what are you working on next?
So I'm on, we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as Lego Lost at Sea. And my next project actually is I'm providing a chapter on the Lego for a book on plastic archaeology, and also working on our scientific paper about the spread of the Lego over the last 25 years.
Well, thank you again for joining us. To the listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
I met with Greasy Annie, Woolly Annie, Shimbo Annie.